lonely vegetarian sweep you off your feet like a maid marrying, having fun like a seminarian await. You say you're a happy Unitarian laughing in the wind like an old Bulgarian. Hey, by the way, are you a librarian? Oh, how sweet, a lonely librarian. Oh, so
hello and welcome to the Mount Kisco Public Library Podcast. We have a very exciting episode for you today. We are starting an auditory Feast of Awesome. Feast of Awesome is the website of the debutante authors of 2009. So we are going to be interviewing a brand new author, Sandra Mitchell, who will be telling us about her book Shadowed Summer, her other novels in progress, and ghost hunting, and lots of other fascinating things. Enjoy!
Hello, Sandra.
Hi.
Yeah, it's Deirdre from the Mount Kisco Library.
Hi.
And Maria is here too.
Hi, Sandra.
Hello.
This is so exciting.
I'm so excited.
We both really enjoyed your book. It was...
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much.
Right. One thing that I want to ask, we noticed that you are in the Midwest. But,
yes.
But your novel is set in Louisiana, and it definitely has a southern feel and a voice to it. So are you actually Southern by parentage?
No, no. I was born and raised in Indiana. My entire family is from Indiana. I do have like a step aunt who lives in Baton Rouge, but mostly it's research. And my best friend is from Georgia, so, you know, I use some of that. But mostly it's research.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, this is
as librarians, that makes us very happy because we like people to know that research is worthwhile.
Yes.
And I actually did quite a bit of research in the library.
I did not
just use Wikipedia, because a lot of the linguistic sources that I needed to use to get the dialect correct, that's not online. I had to go to the library to get the linguistic sources that I needed to make sure that the voice was correct.
Oh, that's really great.
And you know what? The one thing that I counted on the internet for, I got wrong.
Oh.
Because there's a couple of points where Iris calls soda pop. Uh-huh. And in Indiana, we call it Coke. In most of the South, they call it Coke. It's like, you know, you want a Coke? Yes. What kind? A Sprite. It's a generic term. But
wow.
It was one of those, because I'd been, you know, talking about RC specifically, I didn't want it to be all confusing, because I figured, you know, I've got Where You At, which is already kind of confusing, and, you know, just a bunch of other terminology, like wool gathering. My editor was like, what is wool gathering?
He's oh,
like,
heavens, I know that.
Yes, so,
I'm a New Englander.
I didn't even think about it, and the copy editor put in pop to specify in the places where I was, like, not specific, and I didn't even think about it, and I had checked the Coke versus pop versus soda website to see if that was all right. And it's like, well, we've got 8 people in Ascension Parish who say pop. It's like, so, okay, I just let it go on copy edits. And I've had like 10 or 12 Southerners. It's like, you know, I was really into it and I believed that you were Southern until you said pop.
Wow, that's so amazing. So
I'm trying to change that for the paperback.
Well, then it'll be perfect,
yes,
the voice, I'm
exactly
sure.
Correct.
Well, better. I can't say it's going to be perfect, but it'll be
no,
better.
Because I'm not a Southerner, and I guess I couldn't really judge either. But,
that's true. That's true.
But I was really delighted that a librarian that lives down in Ascension Parish was like, she really knows her Southern stuff. It wasn't all bad Cajun accents and Mardi Gras. So I was like, yay!
That's wonderful when you get someone who's actually a local from where you're writing to agree that you actually know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that was the scary part. I was really worried about, because I did tons and tons of research, but I have never been to Louisiana. So it was like, oh, I hope I got it right. I hope I got it right.
Wow. So are you planning to go to Louisiana now?
At some point, unlike, you know, Stephanie Meyer and Stephen King, I'm not making $9 million a day. So, you know, I have to wait until I can afford to go, but I would like to go. I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. I was like, I actually had a bookstore down there. I was like, well, if she's ever in town, have her come in and sign. And it's like, you know, gosh, if I were ever in town, I totally would do that. But I'm probably not going to be in town anytime soon.
Aww. I'm sure they'd be happy to get you whenever you make it down there.
I hope so. That would be nice. That'd be fun.
Yeah, totally. Well, Sandra, I think we have a couple of questions for you about the book and about other things, so.
Okay. Here I am.
Okay, so my first question is about the names in the book. How do you go about naming your characters?
Iris showed up in my head with her name. I mean, one day I just suddenly had this character in my head named Iris Rame, and I knew our best friend was Colette. But other than that, generally what I do is for secondary characters, I go to the U.S. Census website, and I pull up the year that they were born. And I pick the names from the top 100 for the year that they were born. That way they're accurate for the period. Because it's always so weird to pick up, like, a YA book now, and everybody is named, you know, Susie and Crystal and Becky. And it's like, it doesn't sound right, because it's not accurate to now. So that's how I name most of the secondary characters. And then I can get away with a little more goofiness when it comes to the main characters, because, you know, I mean, I'm never going to have anybody named like soap opera names, but you know, Iris was not in the top 100 names for 1994, but because everybody else has a name that's appropriate for when they were born and the region that they were born in, then I can get away with calling her Iris.
Huh. That's fascinating, because I know when we first communicated, when I wrote to you, I was really taken with the name of the town. Undine.
The town is different than naming the people.
Well, I wondered, because Iris is also a Greek goddess with a certain role. And
yes.
Your Iris has that role too.
That was accidental. I deliberately named the town. Uh-huh. But you know, the fact that Iris actually fit into that was completely on accident. On the first draft of the book, I actually had a whole section in the first chapter that talked about what people thought had happened to Elijah Landry. And one of them was that, you know, he walked down into the bayou and the water swallowed him. And that's why I named
right.
it. What I did.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that disappeared in later drafts. And the fact that Iris is named Iris and fits in with Undine, that's actually an accident. That's a happy accident.
Wow. That's a very happy accident. And
yeah.
Maybe just to explain to people who are not into romantic literature as much, should we do that? There is a famous story which has been made into dances, ballets, Undine, which concerns love and betrayal, accidental betrayal, because somebody's in the position of making a promise they can't keep.
Yeah.
And they end up dying by water.
Yeah.
So, and I noticed that I was a little nervous, because I was like, oh no, a tragic love story.
It is a tragic love
yeah,
story.
It is.
It's just not the love story that you expect it to be initially.
Right. Which is really, really interesting, I think.
I enjoyed playing with that. But, you know, I think it actually bothered some readers that, you know, that Iris and Elijah didn't fall in love, or that I've actually had a lot of people who are like, well, but why didn't they? Why wasn't it? Sorry.
Well, that would... There are certain major obstacles to that relationship.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And not every major character or every major female character has to fall in love with some sort of paranormal person or undead thing, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for me, you know, I really felt like this was more a book that, you know, it was about Iris and her father, and it was about Iris and her friendship with Colette. And, you know, being at that point where you can't be friends with your friends the way that you used to be, and at the same time you're realizing that your parents had a life that you know nothing about. And so, you know, once I realized the book that I was writing, I never wanted there to be a central romance to it, even though I really enjoy romances. I mean, I'm writing one now, so I promise. Okay. People kiss later.
Oh, good. Okay. Because actually, I was going to say, Sandra, the story is very romantic.
Yeah, you know, I think it's classic, like a classic sense of romance, because, you know, Byron and Shelley and Mary Shelley and all are writing romances, but they're not necessarily about romantic relationships. I think that there's a lot of ways to use romance, and you know, while I do enjoy like your traditional, you know, eyes met across the room kind of romance, I really like romantic fiction that's about the way we interact with everybody. Iris and Colette, I mean, they love each other very much, and that's why they so effectively hurt each other. And, you know, it's just like a little edge of dramatic and romance to everything, even though it's not necessarily focused on hooking up and macking, you know. Now I've made it myself.
Okay, so I have a question, because the other part of the story, other than the friendship between Iris and Colette and Iris's relationship with her father, there's kind of like this whole ghost story mystery element.
Yes.
So I was wondering if you have always enjoyed ghost stories or mysteries.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's more ghost stories and mysteries, although, you know, ghost stories and mysteries tend to go hand in hand.
Right.
I grew up on, you know, a fairly poor side of town, and we were poor, and the only place that, you know, I ever felt like I was rich was at the library, and it's like, I would spend so much time down in the 312s. It's like, oh, I'm finding about, you know, clairvoyance and past lives and reincarnation. And, you know, I would come out with a stack of 10 or 20 books, and I felt so rich learning about the beyond, because it was too big for me at the time to really think about the world of going to college or the world of living in a city. But, you know, I could dig the world of I can raise the window sash with my brain. So, you know, that's where I started. And, you know, I love Betty Renwright and Vivian Van Belde and, you know, Lois Duncan and Zilpha Keatley Snyder. Oh my, I read The Egypt Game 9,000 times and The Headless Cupid and The Dollhouse Murders. And that is so exactly where I started with everything that I really enjoyed reading. So it's not surprising that that's where I started with, you know, writing.
I see that on the jacket flap, it actually says you do ghost hunting as a hobby now.
I used to. I don't now because, you know, my kids are getting older and I don't really have time for it. But when I was younger, yeah, we did. We were real serious about it, too. Like, you know, not only would we take people's information, but we would also search out unusual places because everybody has, you know, community rumors. And we had heard that when Indianapolis moved cemeteries from the Military Park Cemetery downtown to the new section in Crown Hill for the military dead, we had heard that what they actually had done was just picked up the tombstones for the rebel soldiers, but not actually the bodies. So we went through and we got all the old maps and overlaid them over new maps to see if we could find where the old graves were. And we had fun. It was interesting.
So there was a whole gang of ghost hunters, huh?
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of us. There was
wow.
Probably like 8 of us. And, you know, we'd go and stay the night in questionably haunted houses and stuff like that. But, you know, the only actual ghost that I've ever experienced is like was not when we did anything formal. So I think if you're looking for them, they hide.
Oh, this may be the case. We hear that there's a ghost in our brand new library already.
Oh, really? How did that happen?
We don't know. But this random person goes around saying hello to people and there's nobody here.
That's interesting.
Maybe shouldn't have said that because we want people to come in here. So.
Well, you know what? You'd have put people come in there just to see if it happens.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe you have like some materials from a previously haunted residence that the ghost came in on. You know, like there's a balustrade or something from an old haunted house. See, I'm writing a book about your library
right here.
It's possible. Right. Some of that furniture that was donated, you never know.
There you go.
That's the truth. And then again, we were reusing the bricks from the old building. Okay, so now we understand.
There you go. Okay. Now you have some mythology for your new ghost.
Yay. Brand new.
But, you know, if they just want to say hello, they're not going to hurt anything. They're just like, hi. You know, I say hi.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Right. And they don't actually hang out in the children's room. They're more in the reference area.
See,
a ghost aspiring to education.
There you go. Maybe they're trying to figure themselves out. How did I get stuck here and how do I get out?
Possible.
Oh, they're in the 312 too.
Wow.
Like, oh, we shouldn't have called Sandra.
No, we're enjoying that we called Sandra. So I was wondering, I will say that the cover, though interesting, does not match the book.
Yeah, it was one of those things where when I got the art, I actually got the entire piece of art, which is way bigger than what you see on the cover. And I really expected them to use it in a different way. So, you know, the cover's oddly balanced, and it's odd image choice, I think. Although I was really excited that the artist put in the shirt that Iris actually
gets. Right, yes, oh, I noticed that.
Found that exciting. Mm-hmm. And she does look like Iris to me, but I don't know. It's not what I expected necessarily. Now, the paperback cover uses the same art, but I think that they do a better job of representing the book.
Interesting.
With the paperback cover. It's really weird because, you know, the covers and even the title, those are marketing decisions.
Oh.
And it's like, I have nothing to do with any of that. As Matt, when I sold this book, it was called Last Summer's Iris.
That's interesting. I liked that title.
Thanks. I liked it too, but marketing did not. I actually got 32 different titles, and finally marketing, you know, boiled it down to 8 titles, and it was essentially pick the one off this list that you can live with.
Whoa.
And some of them were ordinary. It's like, you know, Summer Ghost or something like that. And some of them were terrible, like Ghost Stone.
That's weird. Yeah. That's
weird.
So, you know, I like Shadowed Summer. And what I actually did was I gave the truncated list to my 7-year-old daughter. And it's like, all right, pick the one you like, and that's what the book will be. And so she picked Shadowed Summer.
Okay. So, yeah.
So, but, you know, the cover and the, you know, that's all marketing. You see, they think that that's how it will sell.
I see. That's so interesting. I wonder how they decide that.
I have no idea. But you know what? I know that like Barnes & Noble and Borders has a big say in it.
Oh.
Because, yeah, a lot of people have had like covers turned back. It's like Barnes & Noble hates this cover, so we're doing a new one. Or, you know, Barnes & Noble will take 6,000 of this book instead of, you know, 4,000 of this book if you change the cover. That part is all about marketing.
Wow.
All this insight into the publishing world that we didn't have before.
Troubles.
Because we just happily get the books and put them on the shelves and read them and recommend them.
There's a lot of science that goes into it, and most of it is marketing science that I don't understand at all. But, you know, the great thing about Shadowed Summer as a title is not only is it easy to abbreviate when, you know, I'm sending emails and stuff, but it's the only Shadowed Summer on the internet. Just in the last week or two, somebody self-published a novel called Shadowed Summer that now shows up occasionally. But if you Google for Shadowed Summer, it's all me.
Ooh.
So it was obviously a good marketing decision.
Yes, very good.
Yes. Okay, everybody go out there and Google for Shadowed Summer.
That's right.
And then come to the library.
And check it out.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, it's great. I love libraries so much, and I was like, I was sad to think that my book might be one of the little quiet books back in the corner that nobody would pick up, and it would be lonely until finally it had to be sold in the library sale because it needed rooms for other books. So that's what it was.
No. I mean, this book has definitely been out a few times, I think, Deirdre.
Oh, yes, I think so. Yeah.
And now that we've both read it, we will heartily recommend it.
Thank you. We will, yeah. I don't think there's anything else quite like it.
Yay, thank you. I think it's actually, if you haven't read it yet, Cynthia Liu's Paris Pan Takes the Dare. Uh-huh. It's more middle grade than my book. It also came out this year. They're similar in, you know, it's not Southern Gothic, and hers is a lighter book, but I think it's very similar in subject matter and scope. And I think that if you think that my book is a little too old for a kid, that Paris Pan Takes the Dare would be like the perfect book to put in their hands.
Okay, we'll look out for that one, too.
Yes, we definitely will. So I have a question about the 2009 Debs. Is it okay if I ask you about that?
Yes, absolutely. I encourage that.
Okay. I was just wondering how this whole Debs thing came about, like how you guys all got together and
well, you know what it was is there's a marketing group for debut authors called the Class Of. And at the time that we started the Debs, we were waiting for Class Of to start, but they weren't open yet. And so, you know, basically we all had our contracts and we were all just congregating and we were waiting for Class Up to start. And, you know, by the time Class Up actually started, we had our own pretty vibrant community. And we have a handful of Debs that are also in Class of 2K9, but, you know, Debs is an entity entirely of its own now. And, you know, we've had like gift swaps and our own personal soundtracks and stuff like that, which is stuff that's just for us. But we've also done programs like Debs Love Librarians, where every quarter we give away a copy of our books to various libraries. And right now we're doing the Debut Library Prize, where any library professional can send in a picture of any one of our books in their collection to be entered to win 46 of them.
We like that one.
Yeah, we like it too. But, you know, it's fun for us because we get to see our books in places that we're not. That's, you know, that's just, it's a goofy writer thing. We just like to see that. You know, when our books first started coming out, like, people would go to their bookstores in their neighborhoods and then come back to Deb's and post pictures. It's like, look, I saw your book. I saw your book on the shelf here.
Wow. But
we're also doing a Deb's holiday tour, which is going to have like 6 or 7 stops, and it's multiple Deb's in a single place.
Whoa. And
so we're excited about that. We're actually going to be announcing that next week, so I should
Okay. Right.
So that's a secret.
Okay.
But, you know, we passed around our advanced reader copies and signed them like yearbooks. And there's so much weird stuff that happens when you have a book coming out for the first time. It's like, you know, you don't know what the copy editing symbols are. And you don't know if it's normal if your editor is doing this. And, you know, you don't know what this and that means. And it's just so nice to have a community of other people who are all going through the same thing that you are at the same time. And so, you know, it's mostly a support group, although we have had, you know, a handful of really neat giveaways, I think. And you know, we're going to continue to have neat things for people who aren't Deb. So we encourage you to stop by at www.feastofawesome.com.
We definitely will. It has become one of our new favorite websites.
Yes. We love looking at, checking it every day for all the new pictures for the contest.
We're having so much fun with the pictures.
Yeah, I have to say that cat does seem to be able to read a little bit better than poor little crazy, but... But then again, I suppose it's a slightly higher form of life.
Well, I have to think that crazy is actually doing a better job because, you know, he has to swim and read at the same time. Whereas the cat just has to sit there. They're already...
Oh, that's, by the way, for those who don't know, Crazy is our library newt. And you can see a picture of him if you go to feastofawesome.com.
We love that picture so much. It's like, we never expected to get a library newt. We thought maybe we'd get 1 or 2 cats, but a library newt, that was awesome. Yeah.
Well, he has a brother that you can see behind him in the picture a little bit. The brother's name is Lazy.
And one of your patrons named them?
Yes.
That is so awesome. How did you get them?
Oh, I got them from one of my favorite science companies, which I use for kids. And I usually either I collect in the wild or I get from a science company some animals for environmental projects and spring and summer projects for the kids. And I was expecting to get your normal red efts so we could release them into the wild. But instead, we got Chinese fire-bellied newts, and they're going to be with us for quite a while.
And you can't set out invasive species.
No.
Yeah, that's your problem.
And anyway, they're far too cute.
Awesome. I love it, library newts. That makes me so happy.
Yeah, we've had library bullfrogs and library luna moths and library butterflies and various things.
That is awesome. See, the library is not just sitting around and reading books. The library is like experiencing things.
Yeah. And we even have books about newts if you want to read
them. You can still read about them as well.
Okay, so I have one more question. I've been following you on Twitter. So yesterday, you tweeted a bit about this murder mystery that you're working on.
Oh, Breath Kept.
Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Breath Kept is it's a murder mystery, and it's about a girl who goes out to Montana. It's the first time she's been away from home, it's the first time she falls in love, and it's the first time she's ever been wanted for murder. So she gets caught kissing this guy, and it's not even a guy that she necessarily likes. I mean, she doesn't dislike him, she just doesn't really know him, it's unexpected. But she gets caught kissing him, and then the next morning he turns up, you know, dead on the ranch that she's living on. And, you know, the ranch is a retreat for artists, but there's also a handful of people living there who have mysterious pasts, including her father, who she's seen maybe 5 times in her life.
Ooh.
And so, you know, everybody could be a suspect, including the boy that lives on the ranch that she is actually falling for. You know, they're trying to figure out who actually committed the murder, because, of course, Parker, that's the lead character, she knows that she didn't do it, but that's the only thing that she's positive about. So it's entirely possible that the boy she's falling for did do it. So we'll find out in the end. You know, I can't give it away.
No, of course not. It does sound very intriguing.
Oh, yes. We are going to wait anxiously for that one.
Well, I'm just now writing it. I'm about 10,000 words into it. So.
Okay. We can wait anxiously for a few years. That's okay. Or however long it takes.
I will let you know.
Uh-huh. Great.
But that is what, that's what I'm working on right now. And I actually have, I have a historical paranormal that's on submission at the moment. So you might actually see that before you see Breath Cab.
Oh, and what is that one called?
That one's called The Vespertine, and it is about a girl who can see the future, but only at sunset, and how that brings disaster on her single season in Baltimore in 1889.
Mm. Whoa.
So, the elevator for Breath Kept is a little bit better than the one for Vespertine.
Okay, well, that's fascinating.
They both sound very, very good.
Thanks. Yeah. I hope so.
Right.
You never know when you're the writer. You either think it's all the worst thing in the world or you're just absolutely genius, and neither one ever true.
Oh. Well, maybe the genius thing, actually. Who knows? I just have one more question, because having heard now about all these books you have coming out, Sandra, it makes me think you must be a very quick writer.
Well, you know, it depends on how you define quick. I mean, the way I work is I schedule myself 1,000 words a day, and I work every single day until the book is finished, which in theory should give me, you know, a 90,000 word book at the end of 3 months. But what happens in practice is I end up throwing away 30,000 words, but once I get past the exposition, I tend to write faster and faster and faster. So usually about 2 months I can finish the first draft.
Wow.
But, you know, the first draft is garbage. So then there's a great deal of revision. You know, my agent, you know, gives me revision notes, and my crit partners give me revision notes. And so, you know, to actually get a manuscript in any kind of shape to be sent out to editors, it's 2 months to write the first draft, and then, you know, 5 or 6 months to do the revisions. And then when the editor takes it, there's even more revision. I actually wrote Shadowed Summer in 2002. And between trying to get an agent and trying to sell the book to editors and all of the revisions that go in between that, you know, I didn't sell it until 2007.
Wow.
So, that's, you know, it's a slow process, even though it sounds like it's fast. And I say, well, I write a draft in 2 months. That's just the beginning. And, you know, there's years that go into actually getting a book on the shelf.
I understand that quite well. And I just wanted to mention to people that my twin sister Mary, who sometimes takes part in this, and we spoke to RJ together, actually, RJ Anderson, with Maria.
She's so awesome. I love her.
Yeah, we do too, and her book is really fun too. And we took part in the webcast of Michelle Paver that she did. It was like this, but a conference all around the world, and it was a video thing. And one of the things that was really fascinating was that Michelle held up a page from her first draft of one of her books, and she does everything in longhand, and I have to say it was amazing because practically everything on the page was crossed out.
Wow. Yeah,
and we were like, oh my god.
Yeah, like Breath Kept that I'm working on, I'm at 10,000 words now that I'm actually going to keep. I've already written 25,000 that I've already thrown away. I've started this book times now.
Which just goes to show you, not everybody writes like J.K. Rowling, and that can be a good thing.
You know what? Yeah. That's interesting with, like, J.K. Rowling and Stephanie Meyer. You can tell that this is their first book that they've ever written, because absolutely everything is on the page. And it's just, you know, there's so much heart there, then, of course, people respond to it. But it's their first books are you can tell that it's just like, let's go crazy and do everything. Which my let's go crazy and do everything book is in a trunk because it's ugly and sad. But it's still my baby, so, you know, I will never throw it away. But it will never see the light of day either.
Oh, but maybe you'll revise it one day and then we'll see it.
See, that's the thing is, like, I love it so much the way it is, even though it's, like, you know, bizarre and terrible. It would hurt me to revise it. So, I know that it would need revision to publish it, but I love it too much to cut it up. So it's better that nobody see it.
Oh, so it'll be a ghost in your attic.
That's right. Yes.
Wow.
Maybe it will haunt your library later.
Oh. Could be. Could be. Well, I think on that note, this might be a great place for us to stop, even though we'd love to continue.
Okay. And
we want to thank you so, so much for speaking with us. And I just have one final question, and that would be my standard question to artists and writers. What would you like to say to young people, middle grade readers or teens who maybe would like to make something or write something of their own? Would you have any advice for them?
Do it.
Cool.
Do it. I mean, you can do it, and you can do it now. You don't have to wait for permission. You know, you don't have to wait to, quote unquote, learn to do it right. Just do it. Mm-hmm. Do it. Now I sound like a Black Eyed Peas song.
Yeah.
Seriously. You know, I really hate the idea that people avoid doing things because, you know, they're afraid they're going to do it wrong. Yeah, you're going to do it wrong. So what? And it's like you keep, you know, the more you do it, the closer to right you're going to get.
Yay.
So there's no point to wait until some magical, because you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm still doing it wrong. You know, because if I knew what I were doing, I wouldn't have to throw away 30,000 words of every book. But, you know, I've got a book on the shelves because, you know, you just do it.
Yeah. And that's it. You learn so much, I think, by reading and writing and hopefully by listening to this awesome interview,
yes,
too.
Yes, I hope so. That or you just, you know, just learn that, you know, writers shouldn't talk. They should only write things down.
Oh, no, not at all. This was delightful. And I hope that everybody enjoys it as much as we did. In conclusion, I'd like to extend many thanks to Sandra for that really wonderful interview. And I'd also like to thank Kyle and the Iliad for our theme song and Cursor Minor for our closing music. And I'd like to thank all of our readers and listeners. Keep reading. Keep listening, and remember, if there's anything you need to know, there's one place you can come. That's right, your library. See you there. Bye.
The library, the library. It's the place where books are free. The library, the library. It's a lot better than watching TV. About almost everything. You'll always find something you're interested in. Plate tectonics or embroidery. Michael Portillo or the banyan tree. The library, the library. It's the place where books are free. The library, the library. It's a lot better than watching TV. A lot of successful people agree. Knowledge is something that can set you free. So if you want to end up famous like me, join the public library. The library, the library.